We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business.
Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to another episode of Proof to Product. Today's guest is one of our Trade Show Bootcamp alumni who transitioned away from wholesale and into art licensing. Her name is Shelley Seguinot, and she began her creative journey in 2013 when she opened I'm Ink Pressed, a wholesale stationery company specializing in children's products. As the paper industry evolved and she saw the digital market expanding, Shelley adjusted her business model to focus on art licensing. On today's episode, Shelley shares how she left a 20-year career in law enforcement to start her business. She tells us how she got her first licensing deal, fears she had when she first started licensing her art, and why it's so valuable to find mentors and community if licensing is something you want to pursue for your business. Hey, Shelley, thanks so much for joining me today.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm really excited to talk to you because we have had several questions about licensing, both in our Trade Show Bootcamp alumni forum, as you know, as well as our Proof to Product Facebook group. And this is your core business now. So I'm really looking forward to you sharing your story. But first, we really need to talk about your career path with everybody. We need to share this with everybody because before you were licensing your work or even running your stationery line, you were a police officer with the New York Police Department for 20 years. Is that right?
Yes. It doesn't sound really tough now to be an artist, but I was tough back then, I guess.
But that's a big shift to make. Were you dabbling in art while you were a police officer or?
I actually attended Parsons School of Design.
Okay.
That's the college I attended. And then just life's twists and turns, I wound up taking the NYPD test and it was just something that I really wanted to do. I just love working with people and I was just drawn to it. So one thing led to the other. I took the test, I joined, and fast forward 20 years later, you know, it was an amazing career.
How did that time in the police department, what skills and experiences, what transferred over to you being an entrepreneur? I have to imagine that 20 years in the NYPD, you picked up a lot of different things that you could still, even though it's totally different that, you know, careers, like, but that you could apply to your entrepreneurial journey.
It definitely has to be just like a little fearless sometimes. I just don't mind putting myself out there and speaking to people and just digging in and getting to the root of things. So, you know, that it kind of in the art licensing world now, I find like it's a little bit of investigating you have to do to get really to the root of the way the industry works. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's helped me a lot, I think.
That's awesome. How did you know it was time to leave law enforcement and jump full time into your business?
From the beginning, I knew I only was going to do the 20 years. So that's the minimum you can do and you're eligible for retirement. So about 5 years before I retired, I went back to school and I got a degree in graphic design. And then it kind of started from there. I actually started I'm Ink Pressed while I was still a cop.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you started I'm Ink Pressed, that was focused on children's products and you sold to both retail and wholesale. I know you did the National Stationery Show. And when did licensing pop up on your radar as a potential revenue source for you?
Well, it was an interesting time, I think, when I exhibited the first time, because the stationery show runs concurrent with Certex, we would get a lot of buyers from Certex that would come over and say, oh, this is really cute. You sell your art. And I was almost offended at the first show when I got a few of those buyers. And I was like, no, I sell my placemats and here's my cute invitations. What do you mean I sell my art? My art is mine. And then I spoke to someone who said, are you kidding? That's really where the money is. It's like, just if you just want to design and not do the whole business aspect of it, like that's the way to go. Mm-hmm. So the second time I exhibited, I had a more open mind. So, and from that second show is that I picked up my first licensing deal.
What, do you mind sharing that story of what that first licensing deal was?
Yeah. So when this buyer came in, it's a company that does greeting cards online and they have several sites. And he came up to me, he was the owner of the company, and he said, you know, do you sell your art? And I said, well, what type of business do you have? And he's like, well, we do greeting cards and invitations, and it's all online, similar to Shutterfly. So I said, oh, absolutely. You know, so it was great because they knew I hadn't licensed before. And they were really good about teaching me on how it all worked and what their model was. And they worked calendar-based, which a lot of companies do. They just give you a calendar at the beginning of the year. And, you know, Christmas will be due in July and Mother's Day is due sometime in November. And so it was good to get that experience with them. And I'm grateful that they gave me that opportunity because I learned so much.
I assume you had a lot of questions. I mean, like any new business model or ever anything new we're doing, I'm sure you had questions of like, how will I get paid? How are things due? Like, what does this look like? And how does this fold into the business I'm already running? So they were very open to kind of nurturing you through that?
Well, they had a model of just licensing. They didn't buy the art outright.
Right.
So, and it was a percentage, you know, later on I learned that depending on the industry, that percentage that they'll pay you in commission will be completely different, depending on, you know, Bolt Fabric pays a little less and maybe the paper is somewhere in the middle, the paper industry somewhere in the middle. So some of them pay more, some of them pay less. And all of that I learned as time went on. So
yeah.
I kind of just took their word for it. I don't know if it was what I was supposed to get paid or not, but it kind of worked out where I actually was getting paid a higher margin than what was expected.
Well, I have to imagine it's one of those scenarios where you're just so excited that they're interested and that they want to work with you and they like the work you're producing that you want to say yes to everything. But at the same time, it's new to you. So you don't want to undersell yourself. You don't want to accept terms that aren't advantageous to you, you know, I know that can feel like a scary process. Did you have fears around that when you were just starting?
I did have fears. Like they sent me a contract and I had never had to sign a contract for anything like that, where, you know, basically it says we have the rights to sell your art and, mm-hmm. you know, you retain the rights to this. And now in hindsight, when I think about it, I should have had an attorney look it over and, you know, but I fully trusted them and, you know, it worked out and they never undercut me or anything, but,
that's good.
You know, you're basically, lending your art to be sold and you're just taking their word for it of how many units are sold, which is totally different than if you're wholesaling a product, you know,
yeah.
you know, the exact exchange of the goods. This
right.
is just like, well, no, we only sold, you know, 10,000 and, you know, we only sold 4,000 or whatever. So you're just kind of taking their word for it. You would have no way of ever proving
right.
that. So,
well, let's talk about those details for a minute. So when you're talking about them providing numbers as to how many sold, those are typically royalty deals where you're getting paid based upon what sells. So in that example, walk us through, they put a call out for a certain type of art. You
yes.
submit your art. What happens then?
So you submit your art, still goes through a design staff that decides whether or not it's going to fit their model.
Okay.
And so the designs that they end up publishing on the site, those are the ones they're just on there. So
mm-hmm.
so then quarterly, you would get royalties based on how many units sold.
Okay. But the contract and all of that, I mean, are you deciding on the contract before they even know what they're going to put your art on? Like, can you walk me through that part of it? Because I know it's changed too.
Mm-hmm. Well, the contract with this particular company came first. So
okay.
before I submitted any work, they sent me the contract. And just in essence, it kind of says that if I decide to no longer work with them, that they still can keep the art on the site for, you know, 12 months or whatever period of time. So it was very specific. It was a two-page contract. It
yeah.
wasn't even that big. So it
That's
was
good.
It was really easy to work with them.
That's good. Yeah, I think people get really intimidated by the contracts, especially the really long ones. And those contracts include things like exclusivity or non-exclusive deals or, you know, how the payment structure is going to be, what the time parameters are. There's so many details. I'm glad you brought up the idea of having an attorney look at those things because I remember when I got my first licensing contract, I was really overwhelmed by it. And I had an attorney in the family look it over just because I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what am I signing? Am I signing my life away here? But anyhow, so at what point did you transition your business to only licensing work?
I saw a big change in the paper industry. It was just everything was starting to go digital. And the sales just weren't there. And because my company was so market specific, where it was children, it was even harder for me
mm-hmm.
than, let's say, the ones that sold greetings or the ones that sold every day. So for me, I saw a huge change. Just people weren't spending the money on personalized products for their kids. And everything pretty much went digital and mass produced by, you know, these bigger companies that just showed up online and took over that industry. So the timing was right that I was already picking up some licensing deals that I made the decision. I kept the company for just up to like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I still had, you know, a handful of retailers that I worked with. But in the end, what I've learned is that I just love to draw and I just love art. And this affords me the opportunity to still make money while I'm mostly just producing art and then worrying about where I'm selling it.
Right. Okay. So after that first licensing deal and you've decided now you want to do more of it, the next projects that you worked on, were you actively seeking those out or were people coming to you? What was your process there for incorporating this more into your business?
It was a mix, pretty much. I stayed with that company for a long time and I was content with just designing the, you know, according to their calendar. Mm-hmm. I picked up a few other ones here and there, just they contacted me. And like I said, it's really an industry that it's like all the other industries. They're just really saturated. There's a lot of artists out there and it's a lot of footwork. So that's come with time that I've had to figure out, well, I have to go out there and seek this because they're no longer coming to me. There's other mm-hmm. avenues now that they go and they can find art where they're not really contacting you as much as they used to. So these companies have, so a lot of them have their own in-house designers. A lot of mm-hmm. them have their go-to agents that where they get all their art from. So for artists like myself who aren't represented by an agent, you really have to go out there and seek these companies.
What kind of things have you done to make it easier for people to see your work? Do you have an online portfolio? Do you really leverage your website to showcase your art in different ways on different products?
I do have an online portfolio and I send out emails and I try to contact a lot of these companies. I just exhibited at Blueprint with a collective. I did that in the spring and that was a great experience. I met a lot of companies there. And nice. It's a lot of follow-up and it's just about building a relationship because they, like I said, there's a lot of artists and they have a lot of places where they can go and buy their art. So it's just a matter of always staying on their radar and it's just a lot of follow-up, a lot of follow-up.
Do you think the biggest hurdle is building those relationships and finding people who are needing artwork or once you're in the door getting your artwork selected for different projects?
It's probably a little bit of both. You know, it's building the relationships. The stationery show, I remember there were companies that from the beginning, like I would go to these seminars and they would say, they're not even going to walk in your booth because you're a new exhibitor. And they right. put that little asterisk in the, you know, in the directory. And it's like, oh, red flag. She's brand new. She has no clue what she's doing. So they would just walk right past your booth. And I didn't really get that at Blueprint. I thought it was a very open show where I'm not sure how Certex, you know, if it's the same thing with Certex, but this is like a really informal show and it's not booths, it's just tables and everybody who walks by nice. Just strikes up conversations with you and it's nice. So yeah, it's
nice. Great. So you mentioned that different companies had calendars. Are there buying seasons for licensing art like there are for product sales? Or is it just that these companies issue an annual calendar of what they're looking for throughout the course of the year and you know far in advance what to submit when?
I think that's really, it depends on the industry. So if their paper obviously is going to be, you know, they probably buy every day all year round and, you know, but they have a certain time where they're working only on Mother's Day and they're only working on Father's Day and, you know, wedding maybe year round for a lot of them. So it all depends on the industry, I think. Some of them are just, you know, maybe a quarter behind because it depends on production, on how long it takes them to produce. So, you know, for example, there was like one company that was working on Halloween and that was in the spring already. They were working on Halloween because it takes a handful of months for them to produce the product and then get it out on the shelves.
Okay. Let's say somebody puts out a call for art. How many pieces are you typically submitting for one project? And what's kind of the steps to putting your best foot forward there?
Well, that first company that I was working with the calendar, they would allow me to submit a minimum of 5.
Okay.
And there really was no maximum. So
interesting.
So I gave myself a number of 20 each time just because some of them were, you know, I may have to submit something this month, but then there may be 2 months before I have to submit for the next season. Mm-hmm. So depending on, you know, if it was Christmas, you try to do more because that's a bigger holiday. But if it was any of the other ones, you know, Valentine's, maybe if it was a busier time of year, maybe I would do less. So it really depended on the actual holiday, but they only gave me the minimum of 5. They never gave me a maximum.
So let's say you submitted 20. On average, like how many would be accepted? And, you know,
out of 20, there may be 4 or 5 that they would say that the colors, maybe sometimes they would just say the colors aren't, you know, weren't fitting what they were looking for. And can you just mm-hmm. adjust the colors or, you know, simple things like that. But I would say on average, maybe about 10% or 15% wouldn't get selected.
Would get selected.
Would not okay. get selected.
Oh, would not get selected. Oh, that's mm-hmm. great, though, that 90% yeah. would. Did the art direct you? Like, would they come back, in that case of the color example that you just gave, would they come back and say, you know what, we like the art itself, but the palette you chose for colors is not really in line with the rest of it. Could you make these changes and then we'll take it?
Yes. So that company would. Some other companies, they give you the color palette.
Okay.
So they tell you, you know, we want it in line with this, and we want, you know, they give you mood boards, and they want it in line with certain with a certain aesthetic that they're looking for. But that particular company was very free about you design at your will.
Yeah.
And then if there was something just that didn't fit, they would send it back and say, can you just adjust it?
Do you like the place that the partners that give you more specific parameters, or do you like having more freedom and flexibility to design?
I like freedom. I definitely like freedom. Yeah. Because I have a color problem. So I could never, if you put me in a box and say, these are the only crayons you can use. Yeah. And it's like my brain can't do it. You know, it just takes me forever because it's just color is just part of it. You know,
right.
you have to be able to adjust it. And it just sometimes that's what makes it look, you know, the finishing touch sometimes is the color.
Right.
So they put you in that box of this is the 8 colors we want you to work with. It's pretty tough.
Well, and okay, so colors is one thing they may give you, but like, and specs for like the, you know, size of the product or whatever, do they ever give you like font criteria and things like that? Like how specific are they?
Yeah, they give you fonts, and that particular company actually had a Dropbox that they shared with me with all the fonts in it,
okay.
all the fonts that they owned. So
nice.
You can only, I mean, and there were hundreds of them, so you had your pick, but they would always give you the font that you could use that they already had the license for.
Right. That way they can consolidate and keep things streamlined. That makes a lot of sense. It's interesting too, because I feel like in my experience with licensing, and it's not as vast as yours, I felt like there were some people that were really great to work with. They were very organized. They had set deadlines. And then there were other people that were just kind of, yeah, submit when you want. And for me, I'm very deadline driven. If I know that I have to get something in by a certain time, I will get it in on a certain time where it's a little more loose than I maybe forget. And not that I forget, but, you know, it's just not as high of a priority. It's not a fire burning that I have to put out right away. What are you seeing in this landscape? Are you seeing more people that are a little more like structured in how they're reaching out to artists, or is it more loosey-goosey?
I think it is a little loosey-goosey at this point. I just think there's a lot of artists, like I said, it's just if you have to go out and find these buyers now.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has their own model, and not everything's licensing. A lot of them just want to buy the art outright. And there's artists that are not willing to do outright sales.
Yeah.
There's artists that will. So then that kind of narrows it down a little bit more. And, you know, so a lot of artists just like to do both. So like at Blueprint, you'll find that they'll do a lot of the artists will they'll do licensing, and they're also open to buyouts or limited buyouts or things.
Can you
along
explain
those lines.
What buyouts are to the audience and what a limited buyout would be versus a just full blown buyout?
Yes. So a limited buyout would be, let's say if you designed an elephant and that elephant now gets sold to a stationery company. So you're giving them the limited license to use it for just paper.
Okay.
You know, a paper, gift wrap, anything along the lines, anything in the stationery industry, but you can still sell that elephant to, let's say, Bolt Fabric or for home decor. So mm-hmm. you can sell it to other industries and then maximize your price. But it is a one-time buyout. It's a flat price. And some of them are buyouts with royalties. You know, they're a mix. And it could also be licensing. And you can also license to just one category.
Mm-hmm.
Then the full buyout is they own the rights. It won't have your name on it. They They bought the art, they bought the rights, they paid a very high price or the maximum price that you gave it, and the art is gone. And okay. That's it. You'll never see it again. It just gets produced by them and it's no longer your art to use in any other,
not in any capacity.
Correct.
Yeah. Can we talk numbers a little bit? Sure. Like what kind of range are people talking about for a full buyout or a limited buyout, or even what are some standard licensing payment arrangements?
Well, that's an interesting topic because when I was getting ready to do Blueprint, I had never sold out outright or so I've just licensed. So right. To me, that was completely foreign. You know, there's a few Facebook groups online and, you know, the Blueprint has an exhibitors group, and that subject came up several times because there were first time exhibitors who just like myself had no idea of what the pricing structure was. And although I came up with a pricing structure before I made it to the show, I realized that it's still, once you're in front of the customer, you really just have to wing it and come up with your own.
Yeah.
So it's just, you have to price out whether or not how attached you are to the art. So some things that took you a long time to produce, you'd have to price for higher. Something that it may be the world's cutest turtle, but I can make another turtle and it'll look different and I can sell it to somebody else. Yeah. So it's just, the pricing structure is really, and things can range from, $500 to $1,500 to, for one piece of art. It's just anything less than that would not be worth it. And if the price is way too high, then you may just turn off the buyer and they may not be interested in it.
Right. I feel like it's a bit arbitrary, on one hand, I think you could look at, okay, well, what are they planning to use this for? And how many pieces are they going to apply this to? And what's their potential income that they're going to make on this one piece of art? But at the same time, those aren't set numbers. Those are assumptions, and you also have to look at your costs, your time to develop whatever it is. And if you have other interested buyers or how you want to use it, I don't know. I feel like one of the hurdles I see people having when they come into licensing or art buyout and stuff like this is there aren't industry standards around some of it, And so then it feels like, gosh, am I getting the best amount that I possibly can, or am I selling myself short? Licensing has some kind of ranges that are appropriate based on the industry and the category of product, correct?
Correct.
What's kind of the range if you don't mind sharing, or if for paper versus like fabric or home decor type stuff? Do you mind sharing just a few so we can get a ballpark?
So paper, we had, there was this company who came up who was selling they were producing some kind of cases, like phone cases and things like that. And they wanted to purchase the art at $100 per design. And I was like, I'm not going to sell a design for $100 because I don't know the margins of what you're going to sell this case for and how many units are you going to sell. And that's the other thing. Once you hand it over to them, there is no cap on how many units they can sell. So it's just unlimited. So it really depends on the industry. I know paper is somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then things like home decor can go for more. Things that they'll be producing in like actual, 3D form, art that gets produced like that will sell for more. And then bolt fabric, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't sold any bolt fabric, but I believe that's on the lower end because so much of it has to get produced and,
Right. I assume too, it does correlate to some degree to the end product that's being sold,
Yes.
Because it goes into their production costs. A personal question. What is your favorite licensing project that you have worked on?
It has to be paper. I mean, it's still kind of where it's what I know and it's what I love still. So, and I'm one of those diehard, snail mail people. So I know that paper is where my heart is at. It's what gave me my start. Mm-hmm. So designing greeting cards and designing invitations is still my passion.
Awesome. What advice would you have for somebody that's just getting started in licensing, that's curious about it? What would you tell them? And then I have a follow-up question to that too.
What I would tell them is you have to seek professional advice just from the beginning, just because, I had no idea of, can I do this by myself? Do I need an agent? Am I better off with an agent? there's all sorts of different ways you can sell your art. So for me, it's just, you know, there's a lot of really good agents out there that I know Ronnie Walter has been a huge help for me. And she does consultations and she will guide you and, you know, get to the bottom of, well, you know, what exactly are you looking for in this industry? And do you need an agent? Are you, you know, are you the type of person that's going to go out and really get the work? Or would you prefer somebody do that business side of it while you just produce the art? Mm-hmm. So that's the best money you could ever spend if you're trying to make it in that industry, is just get someone to give you professional advice.
I love that. I think there's so much that we can learn from those that have already gone before us, that have walked the walk. I mean, it'll fast forward your business when you leverage somebody like your contact who can just tell you how it needs to go. You know, it'll right. save you time. So you mentioned agents. What other resources, books or other, are there groups and things that people can go join if they want more information about licensing that you're aware of?
Yeah, there's a lot of groups online. I know there's a lot of classes out there. There's a lot of groups that are on Facebook, and you know, some of them are for beginners and some of them are more advanced. Like the Blueprint group is more about, you know, when you're getting ready to exhibit. And you know, just like a trade show bootcamp had, you know, that was a huge asset for the, you know, for the, anybody exhibiting the stationery. That helped me tremendously for someone who had no idea, you know. So the Blueprint exhibitor group is similar to that, and still off season. You'll get every now and then someone will say, well, I just got this deal. Has anybody heard of this company? And,
yeah,
you know, does this sound right? And, you know,
that in and of itself is so helpful, just to know, like, we get that a lot too in our trade show bootcamp group of, hey, I was contacted by this company. Are they legit? Are they good to work with? What's, right. you know, what's the backstory there? So
right.
I agree. Having that community to surround yourself with as you embark on something new, it's just so powerful. What do you think a misconception is that people have about licensing?
A misconception, I think, is that, you know, people think it's easy. They think it's like, oh, I drew this and now I'm going to go and sell it. Or I made, you know, four fabric collections and I'm just going to go and sell it. And it's not as easy as it sounds. It is a lot of footwork, like I said. It's just, it takes a lot of research. It's a lot of, you know, making connections and building that community and finding people to guide you and just to make sure that you're doing things the proper way, that you're backed up by the right people.
That makes a lot of sense. I think licensing is, well, one, it's a great business model and it's worked very well for you. And I'm still doing some licensing that I very much enjoy. But I do think there's a misconception that it's easy and that anyone can do it. And, you know, it's like anything else. It takes hard work and fortitude and follow up and all these things to make it really succeed. So tell us, what's next for you? What are you working on? You know, what are your plans for the business? What's coming up?
So right now I'm working on all new designs because I've just signed up again to exhibit at Blueprint. And this year they've moved it up to, it's staying at the same, it's in May again, but the stationery show moved and there's a lot of that going on of who's mm-hmm. doing what and what, you know, are we going to get the buyers? So just from exhibiting the first time at Blueprint, I have now a better understanding of what the buyers are looking for and how diverse your portfolio has to be in order to attract a greater group of buyers.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about that. I assume you need a lot of different aesthetics and styles. And
so like at our table, we had, you know, I was in a collective. So we had just all the categories. We had florals, we had children, we had novelty, we had, we had conversational, we had plaids, we had like geometrics. It was like geometrics and plaids all in one. And there was like Christmas, which is a huge category. And right. then we had like seasonal, you know, non-Christmas. So it's just a lot goes into it. You have to produce these huge sell sheets that, you know, sometimes it's just one design on them. Sometimes it had coordinating patterns. So, you know, they'll buy it as a full set if mm-hmm. they see that, you know, depending what it's for. But that's pretty much where I'm at now. I'm just trying to add more to my portfolio. So and I'm trying to pace myself so when the show comes around next time, I'm not like, you know, it's crunch time and I have to get all this stuff together. There's promotional material and it goes into it and yeah. a lot of follow-up. And it's just like, you know, the stationery show. You have to let the buyers know, well, I'll be at the show again. And, you know, yeah. so all of that, I just don't want to be producing all this work at the last minute. So
right. Oh, yeah. That's never helpful. No. I've been there. It's not fun. So at these licensing shows, are people buying the art right then and there? Are they like making arrangements to do the deals after the show, or how's that work?
Well, some of them are the buyers are there. Some of them are reps that the companies send, and they pick and choose which sheets they want. And then they'll say, well, can you send me JPEGs of these?
Gotcha.
And because they don't have the buying decision. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it is the buyer and they will buy it outright right there. So money exchanges hands at the show, unlike, you know, the stationary show where no money exchanges hands.
Okay, very cool. Well, where can people find you to check out your portfolio, see the work that you're doing, and just learn more about your business on social or your website?
I am on Instagram as I'm Impressed Still, because I can't let go of the name for some odd reason. But my website is shellyseguinat.com.
Excellent.
And I'm also teaching a couple of Skillshare classes I have. So that's another passion of mine. I love teaching. So Skillshare has given me that platform to just go on there. I teach my illustration classes and I just did a watercolor one. So
that's
awesome. It's a fun platform for me. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, we will be sure to link all of that in the show notes so people can find you and check out your classes as well as your portfolio. And thank you so much for pulling back the curtain on licensing and sharing your experiences as well as just kind of how it works. I think licensing can feel like this great unknown for a lot of artists and a lot of product makers, and they have the same reaction you had when the first person came up to you at the show and was like, do you have a license? You know, the kind of, wait a minute, no, what do you mean? This
Not
is
my
art. Right. Exactly. But thank you for sharing your experiences, because it's going to help a lot of other people. So
thank you for having me. This was fun.
Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, and I am hosting a free masterclass where I'm going to share my top 3 secrets for maximizing your trade show investment and tips on how to keep your wholesale orders coming in long after your trade show ends. Now, this free workshop is for anyone selling physical products, not just stationary brands. And it's helpful to anyone considering large-scale wholesale shows like New York Now, Stationery Show, or even Atlanta's Mart. If you're interested in listening in, head on over to theboothblueprint.com to sign up for this free masterclass. Again, that's theboothblueprint.com. I look forward to having you join me. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.